A new lawsuit filed Wednesday aims to redraw Wisconsin's Republican-favored legislative maps. The suit argues that Wisconsin's legislative maps are extremely partisan and that they violate the Wisconsin Constitution. We're talking to a political scientist about what the lawsuit argues and where the case could go from here. And we want to hear from you. The number to call is 800-642-1234. What do you wonder about the process of drawing voting districts or suing over those borders? Do you think Wisconsin's current voting maps are fair? Do you feel represented by our state legislature? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our guest to navigate this is Charlie Jacobs. He's a professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College. Charlie, it's good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you.
This new lawsuit claims Wisconsin's maps are unconstitutional. What's the argument?
Well, it's actually a rather broad argument. This is one of those throw a pan of spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks, because there are five different approaches that these litigants are taking in the case. One is just a basic argument, as you noted at the top, that these are extreme partisan gerrymanders that are creating an unconstitutional advantage for the Republican Party and for Republican candidates. The second is that there's an equal protection clause, a state equal protection clause violation. That is that the state is treating one group of people as superior and another as inferior. And that way you have an imbalance in the power that each voter has. There's also a free speech issue that's being raised, a free association issue being raised, and just one regarding the issue of free and open government for people under the state constitution. So there's a lot there that the court will have to grapple with if they decide to take this case under their original jurisdiction. But I think that's strategic to try to see whether or not the court is amenable to any of the arguments that are being offered.
And when you're talking about original jurisdiction, you're talking about how the Supreme Court of the state can choose to take a case from the very beginning. It does not have to go through all of the lower courts to get to them.
That's exactly correct. So we're kind of, this is the game of Monopoly. You're skipping every space and going right to go and collecting your constitutional outcome that you want. That's the kind of approach that they're taking here. Now, it's not clear that the court will take this case under original jurisdiction. In their pleadings, they make a relatively strong argument for this, but there's this discretionary element to what the court gets to do. And because some of the facts in question have not yet been resolved, often courts will say, well, let's let a lower court resolve the issue of the factual record before we take it, because we're not really capable of doing that as the Supreme Court, that typically is only reviewing things on appeal.
What kind of facts can you point to that aren't yet resolved?
Well, I just think it's a question about the makeup of the districts, some of the questions about how they're organized and whether or not they would be considered contiguous. And that is whether or not we have a full block of geography that's being represented by one person instead of sort of the crazy quilt that we see a little bit around the state. So there are a number of issues regarding whether or not people have been harmed. These issues often have to get resolved before the court is going to jump into these kinds of issues.
Well, Republican lawmakers are criticizing the timing, too. Advocates filed it one day after the latest Supreme Court justice was sworn in. Wisconsin voters elected Janet Protasiewicz, which tips the balance of the court, that seventh person, to be more liberal. What do you think of that strategy?
Well, it's not unexpected. You run one of the most expensive campaigns for a state Supreme Court judge ever. And I think you can expect if you win that people are going to bring cases they think are going to be treated favorably by the new membership on the court. Certainly, conservatives and Republicans would do the same thing if the conditions were changed. So the timing is not unusual. I think that one of the things that we have to keep in mind that Justice Hagedorn, while certainly has been siding with those who are more liberal on the court, has a history of being somewhat more conservative and Republican. And so it's not as though the 4-3 majority is going to be solid and continuous during the term of this particular court. But it is advantageous for these plaintiffs to bring this case at this time. And they want to do it now because with the impending 2024 elections, if they are successful, they may force the redrawing of these districts. And they're making an argument that some of the senators are going to have to run again, even though their term isn't up, because they're currently occupying districts that are unconstitutional. So they're really trying to shake up the electoral map for the next election. That is a tight time frame to try to get this all done in, especially if it has to go to the lower courts. So the timing had to be quick if they wanted to get this done by the 2024 election in November.
Hmm. Charlie Jacobs is a professor at St. Norbert College, and we're talking about a new lawsuit that challenges Wisconsin's voting maps. You can ask your questions, give us a call, help us understand how you feel about this at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. And we've got Andy in Appleton, who is ready to have a conversation with us. Hi, Andy.
Hi. I've been pretty excited about fair voting maps. I know the Wisconsin Coalition on Fair Maps proposed to Green Bay some different maps, and they took about 2 minutes to totally reject it. It wasn't appreciated, the effort at all. And I know Iowa has got fair voting maps, but they still vote overwhelmingly one way. And I've seen that in Wisconsin, too, so that even if we've fixed the voting districts and have fair maps, you still have this big trend going on in Wisconsin, which is rural Wisconsin still is overwhelmingly red and still flies the Let's Go Brandon flags, and the cities, urban areas, are overwhelmingly blue. So that, even with fair voting districts, that trend is still going to exist in Wisconsin. And the last thing I was hoping to have someone address for me is, how come Wisconsin's got 4.5 million eligible voters, but only 3.5 million registered voters? That's a pretty big gap.
All right, Andy, thanks so much. I'm not sure, Charlie, I don't know if that last question is really within the scope of what we're talking about here. Do you know?
I mean, the short answer really is no one is compelled to register to vote or to vote, unlike, say, the nation of Australia, where you are required to show up and vote by law. It's a misdemeanor if you don't. People can choose to register or not. We don't have automatic registration. Certainly that could be effective if we automatically registered everybody who was qualified to vote, but that's not something that the public has, and politicians, quite honestly, have embraced, because it makes outcomes a little bit more ambiguous. When you know who the registered voters are, you have a tendency to know how they're likely to vote, and you can plan accordingly in your campaigns. It's a wild card when you have a bunch of new voters enter the fray, and that makes especially incumbent politicians very nervous. His first point.
Exactly. That's what I was going to ask about, to Andy's first point, just about the nuance that even if we have what he would consider fair maps, he sees the communities that are urban versus rural going in different political directions.
And that's true. And certainly, I think even a better example might be something like the state of Kansas or the state of Missouri, where you really do have two centers of Democratic strength, which are in the more urban areas. And you can try all sorts of gymnastics to draw maps that are quote unquote fair, but you're still going to have a block of red in the middle of these states where there isn't a larger urban population that tends to vote more democratically. And so that would be a problem here in Wisconsin too. But the difficulty is that we'll take the 2018 elections in the state where 53% of the legislative vote was in the direction of Democrats. And Democrats only won 36 of 99 assembly seats. There are a lot of Democrats, and yes, they are splayed across the state. But when you purposefully draw districts in a way which does one of two things, cracking or packing. And so cracking means we take a locus of Democrats or Republicans or any group, and you crack them and put them in various districts, diminishing their power to effectively compete for a seat. Packing is, well, you grab a whole bunch of like-minded individuals, put them into one district, often very oddly shaped, and while they win one seat, they empower the other districts around them to win in the alternative political direction. And so those two effects can be really problematic. And so when we talk about fair maps, we're just talking about drawing districts where you are creating more competition. It's not that Democrats or Republicans will win. It just creates more competition. That may have the effect of diminishing polarization in the United States, because you have to actually start to think about bargaining and compromise and being a little bit more centric in order to win your race, rather than just rolling to election day because all of your voters are either Democratic or Republican.
Your cracking and packing explanation might apply right now. We've got Agnes in La Crosse who has a question for us. Hi, Agnes.
Hey, here's my question. I'm in La Crosse, which is always Democratic, and we're packed in here pretty good. I'm curious if in the last election for the Assembly and for the Senate, were there more Republican votes cast in total or Democratic votes? Because, I mean, there were more Democratic votes cast for Protasiewicz. There were more Democratic votes cast for Evers twice. I'm curious, if you just look at the votes cast, did more Democrats vote? It's just that they were cracked.
Agnes, thank you so much for that question. What do you know about this, Charlie?
So I don't have off the top of my head that breakdown. So, and the best way to look at it is, again, when we're talking about Assembly seats and Senate seats, about the votes cast in the legislative elections. I don't have that off the top of my head. And,
sure.
And of course, one of the difficulties in this state is because you don't have to register as a Republican or a Democrat, and we have open primaries, it's often really hard to determine what percentage of the public considers themselves has a political identification as either a Democrat or a Republican. So that's a little bit hard to divine. And of course, since we don't join political parties like we would say the Elks Club, you know, you can change your mind anytime you want to. You can bounce from one party to the other. So it's this moving target. But 3 of 5 statewide races went to the Democrat. So it seems like there was a preference in the Democratic direction. Again, the last Supreme Court decision or race went to someone who was considered more liberal and a Democratic candidate, even though it's nominally nonpartisan. But this state does have and exhibits packing and cracking. That is, we are trying to, whoever's drawing the maps is trying to create opportunities for the Republicans to win. And so they're trying to find pockets of Republicans and Democrats to put together or break apart in a way that creates this disadvantage. So right now, the Senate has a veto-proof majority and only 2 votes away in the Assembly for that. And so when you look at a state where, as you note, Agnes, you know, Evers has won twice and we've had some landslides for Democratic or liberal candidates, it seems odd that the state legislature is so overwhelmingly one party. And so that's the difficult issue here. And this is the issues that's being raised in this particular lawsuit.
We're talking with law and politics expert Charlie Jacobs about a new lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's Republican-favored legislative maps. Taking your calls along the way at 800-642-1234. This conversation continues next on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina, talking with Charlie Jacobs, professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College. We're going over a new lawsuit that seeks to redraw Wisconsin's current voting maps, arguing that our current maps are unconstitutional. And Charlie, we've seen lawsuits over these same maps before. What is different about what we've seen this week?
So in my mind, what's different about this particular lawsuit is the strategy that the plaintiffs are taking. When you read this, although there are some mentions of federal case law and the United States Supreme Court, the focus of this case is almost exclusively on provisions within the state constitution and state law and state practice. And that matters because over the last several decades, the United States Supreme Court has been reluctant to the point of ignoring all pleas to end gerrymandering. And it's on a principle related to whether or not there's an actual case or controversy. And there is a doctrine at the United States Supreme Court level that says, if we deem this to be a political question, that is something to be resolved by the political branches and not through legal means, we're not going to decide the case. And so that's why in the past, even cases from Wisconsin have been dismissed in one form or another because they won't tackle the issue. And this is important because what the court is saying is, how are we supposed to determine what percentage of Republicans or Democrats are supposed to be in a district? It's beyond our capacity. So I think what the plaintiffs figured in this case was, it's kind of a loser of a case if we take it to the federal court. So what we're going to do is focus exclusively on state issues. That way the federal courts won't or can't get involved because it's exclusive to the sovereignty of Wisconsin and not to any issues of federal law or the federal constitution. So this is going to be a really interesting case because there's sort of very little wiggle room to appeal this to what many consider a very conservative and Republican United States Supreme Court. And now with a more liberal leaning state court, there might be some room for them to actually dismantle what they perceive to be unconstitutional gerrymands at the state level.
What arguments can Republicans make to defend these maps that work in their favor?
Well, I think one of the ones that they're going to make is that in the Johnson series of cases that happened right after this post-2020 census was that the previous court made arguments about the simplest way to resolve the dispute between the governor and the legislature when Tony Evers rejected and vetoed the map created by the Republicans. They went to the state Supreme Court, which resolved the issue. And so I think what they're going to argue is we've resolved this issue before. The court offered an alternative, which was this approach to create sort of the least change possible from the 2011-2012 maps. And so I think what they're going to say is precedent should lead us to retaining these maps until the next census in 2030. And of course, the argument against that will be you're just entrenching your power. And since you'll be in power because of these unfair maps in 2030, that will just perpetuate into the future. And we will never have maps that, as Andy characterized, as fairer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for taking us through some of the background and kind of the process judicially that we have gone through to actually wind up with these maps in the first place, because that was also debated back and forth. We are talking with Charlie Jacobs about a new lawsuit filed to redraw Wisconsin's voting maps, and we're taking your calls. We've got Bruce in Cumberland on the line. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had caught a statistic on NPR a while ago about marijuana legalization, and over 60% of Republican voters want that legalization. And when it came around to a vote, the Republican-held legislature disenfranchised their constituents in that decision. We're also Wisconsinites first. They just tried to do it with education funding. And so they hold their own people hostage. That would be clear to me that they would hold the blue side hostage. I think that makes it very difficult for me to be a Republican in this state.
Bruce, thank you for sharing that. I want Charlie to be able to weigh in on this idea that gerrymandering overly partisanly is leading to disenfranchisement, not just for the other party, but also for your same constituents.
Well, and it goes to a deeper Democratic debate about, you know, small d Democratic debate about what representatives are supposed to do. Are they supposed to sort of serve a delegate function where they're reflexively meeting the demands and needs of constituents? Or are they supposed to take an approach where they instead are trying to use their own best judgment to the benefit of the public, whether or not the public likes it or not? It's kind of like, you know, forcing a kid to take castor oil when they don't want to. And the argument would be from the state legislature, well, we've seen the data, we understand the dynamics of legalizing marijuana, so even though you may want it, it's not a prudent approach to take. And so it depends on your approach. Do you want them to have this sort of delegate function, or do you want them to be in some ways supervisory over our own wants and needs to make sure that the right choice, in air quotes, is being made? And so, you know, that's often a personal decision by a legislator, and we have to rely on the public to make the choice about whether or not they're sufficiently meeting the needs of the public. And, you know, Bruce is right. This is a conundrum of any Democratic polity. We have to wonder about how we're being represented.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, this is a brand new lawsuit, but you mentioned that there is a really specific window of time if this might apply in 2024. What is the timeline for something like this moving through the judicial system?
Well, we're going to have to wait first and foremost to see whether or not the court is going to take this under its original jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And if it does, but there are facts that need to be resolved, there are methods by which they can engage actors to help create the factual record. So that will take some time. And then, of course, there will be hearings before the court. Now, if they reject original jurisdiction, well, it's going to have to be refiled, and we're going to have to go through the process fact-finding and appeals. And so it's unlikely that you're going to see that before the 2024 election to give the legislature or the courts time to draft new maps. So this may extend into midterm elections in 2026 and beyond. So this could drag out a while. There's no guarantee that there's going to be an immediate resolution of this issue.
Does the Wisconsin Supreme Court have any sort of deadline?
Not really.
Right.
You know, but I think the liberals on the court are very likely energized with their new majority, and they may be very willing to take some of these cases that have been percolating but have not arrived on their doorstep because of the hesitance to bring it to a conservative court. So for all we know, they're going to stomp on the gas pedal and go. But that also might create some legitimacy issues with the court, that they look far too partisan. So they may take at least some time to determine how they're going to act on this matter.
Got it. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Charlie Jacobs, professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College. We talked with him about a new lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's voting maps and how it could affect future elections. And now we'll have to wait and see. This is Central Time.